is Wednesday, February 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, China redeploys fighter jets to a disputed island in the South China Sea. An analyst comments.
I'm sure that we'll be seeing some Chinese fighters at some point at the bases and Spratlys as well that they've just been building. But that will be bigger news. This is just sort of business as usual.
Amnesty International warns of a global assault on freedoms and human rights. And music fans, get ready for the Oscars, which will include Best Song and Best Original Score. It's all ahead. The United States agreed to disagree over maritime tensions in the South China Sea during talks in Washington Tuesday, even as the head of the U.S. Navy's Pacific Command warned U.S. lawmakers over Beijing's growing militarization of contested islands. Admiral Harry Harris testified before the Senate Armed Services Committee.
China's SSMs, surface-to-surface missiles, surface-to-air missiles on Woody Allen, its radars, new radars on Quarteron Reef, the runway, the 10,000-foot runway on Subi Reef and on Fiery Cross Reef and other places. These are actions that are changing, in my opinion, the operational landscape in the South China Sea. We should continue to exercise our rights on the high seas and in the airspace above it. And we should encourage our friends, partners, and allies to do the same. I believe that China's actions are provocative, increases tensions, and it causes the nations in the region to look to the United States as their security partner of choice and away from China.
Admiral Harris's views came as media reports also say China has deployed fighter jets to Woody Island in the Paracels. It's not the first time warplanes have been sent there, but it raises questions about whether they intend to stay. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, meeting with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry in Washington Tuesday and speaking through an interpreter, reaffirmed China's historic claims in the South China Sea. Kerry, who spoke first, underscored the importance of reducing tensions and resolving disputed claims.
We believe that it is important for a diplomatic solution, for a solution to occur which follows the rule of law, that brings the countries to the table for negotiated resolution, not for unilateral actions. We want to halt the expansion and the militarization of occupied features. We think everybody benefits by true demilitarization, non-militarization. I also reiterated the commitment of the United States of America to freedom of navigation and overflight, something which China says it does not stand in the way of.
The South China Sea Islands have historically been China's territory. China has the right to uphold its territorial integrity and lawful and legitimate maritime rights and interests. At the same time, we are committed to resolving the disputes through dialogue and negotiation in a peaceful way. The South China Sea issue is not and should not become an issue between China and United States. In particular, it's important to prevent any miscalculation. China, United States, and ASEAN countries have all committed to non-militarization. We hope the parties will work together in the same direction.
He said China and Southeast Asian nations can maintain peace and stability in the South China Sea and said he hopes not to see any more air or surface reconnaissance patrols. Ralph Kalsa of the Hawaii-based security think tank Pacific Forum tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the latest Chinese move to put warplanes on Woody Island is just more of the same past behavior.
It's what the Chinese have been doing and will continue to do, and I'm sure that we'll be seeing some Chinese fighters at some point at the bases and Spratlys as well that they've just been building. But that will be bigger news. This is just sort of business as usual.
Well, what are they about? What is their objective?
To remind everyone that they own those islands. These islands were taken forcibly from the Vietnamese back in the 70s. And is obviously a continued bone of contention between China and Vietnam. And it's just part of the overall effort by the Chinese to sort of create facts on the ground. And that's what they've done in the Paracels, and that's what they're trying to do in the Spratlys as well.
Admiral Harry Harris, the head of the U.S. Pacific Command, testified before Congress on Tuesday and said China is changing the operational landscape in the South China Sea by deploying missiles and radar as part of an effort to militarily dominate East Asia.
You know, Harry's a pretty direct-spoken guy, and now the reason that that's significant is not because anybody is surprised that they're militarizing it, but because President Xi Jinping told President Obama they would not militarize it. So obviously it shows that what one president says to another doesn't have a lot of credibility anymore. And the Chinese have, you know, tried to split hairs and say, well, we're putting defensive equipment there. That's not militarizing. And then they've tried to blame it on U.S. freedom of navigation operations. But the reality is, I'm sure the Chinese have planned on doing that all along, and they're just not going to let a promise by their president to ours stand in the way of continuing those plans.
That's Ralph Kossa of the Pacific Forum. He says the Declaration of Conduct of Parties in the South China Sea, which the Chinese signed in 2002, states all signatories will refrain from actions that increase tensions. Kossa also expects U.S. freedom of navigation flights and naval operations to continue, as they have also in areas claimed by the Philippines and Indonesia. Well, in other news, Amnesty International says the global situation for human rights deteriorated in 2015, with the systems designed to protect basic rights themselves under attack by governments. The assessment comes in Amnesty's annual report, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
The sounds of Russian airstrikes targeting the rebel-held city of Aleppo earlier this month. Amnesty International's Tirana Hassan says Syria's brutal civil war remains the most urgent crisis, particularly for refugees.
Who are basically fleeing relentless airstrikes from Russian and Syrian forces. And we documented cases of airstrikes against schools, against hospitals and against civilian homes. Russia and Syria are targeting civilians and civilian objects, and that most definitely is a war crime.
Hassan recently visited the Turkish-Syrian border at Kilis, where 58,000 newly displaced refugees have massed waiting to cross into Turkey. Ankara has refused to open the border.
Europe has basically tried to make Turkey its border guard, and that is not working out. The people who are at the Turkish border right now are absolutely desperate, and they're resorting to using illegal smuggling routes. And we documented multiple cases where Turkish border guards had been firing live rounds on refugees.
The Syrian crisis sits against a backdrop of a deteriorating human rights situation globally, according to Amnesty's latest annual report released Wednesday. Secretary General Salil Shetty presented the findings.
The UN Security Council and the so-called international community continues to watch helplessly as Syria faces a complete meltdown. But it's not just Syria. Iraq, Yemen, Libya, Burundi, North Korea are all in a precarious condition.
Shetty warned that the systems designed to protect human rights are under attack.
Countries that have signed up to the Refugee Convention are shamelessly flouting it in the face of millions fleeing war and persecution. Many African countries have clubbed together, threatening to walk out of the International Criminal Court. At the regional level, the European human rights regime is under threat.
The Amnesty report highlights some successes in 2015, including the release of three Al Jazeera journalists detained in Egypt and the opening of an International Criminal Court investigation into the situation in the West Bank and Gaza. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Well, joining me is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky with a look at what's trending today.
As we've talked about previously on the show, Facebook is making an effort to connect everyone around the world and give them internet access. Now, this has created problems for Facebook in places like India and Egypt, where the program has been critiqued. But as part of this program, they've just announced that they're going to be mapping every human-occupied building on Earth, and their goal ultimately being to map out how to best get internet to some very remote communities. So they're going to be making this map of all these human-occupied buildings around the world and using drones to do so. So a lot of interest in this. Facebook, of course, says they're trying to use this to get internet around the world to some very remote places. But a lot of people, digital privacy advocates, questioning this motive, saying, why do they need all this information and have all these maps? So some questions about that, but a very interesting effort on the part of Facebook, and we'll see how that works out in their effort to spread internet around the world. We also have a report that the U.S. government is going to be scrutinizing the social media of visa seekers. Now, this is something that happened after the shootings in San Bernardino, California, that left 14 dead. There were questions about those shooters and whether they came into this country via visa and what kind of visa process they went through. Well, the Congress is now proposing an effort to monitor social media and to monitor what people who are seeking visas are saying on social media in an effort to stop people who may do harm to the United States from coming into the country. So something that's been debated through Congress, surely to be debated over the coming months as they weigh things such as privacy, security, going into people's social media, how they might do that, how they might access these posts, and whether it's legal.
Thanks, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Just days after announcing the first detection of Einstein's theorized gravitational waves, the LIGO Scientific Collaboration has been granted approval in principle by India to build an advanced laser interferometer gravitational wave observatory there. LIGO currently operates two observatories in the United States, one in Hanford, Washington, and the other in Livingston, Louisiana. The LIGO Scientific Collaboration says the addition of an observatory in India to its network will greatly improve the ability of scientists to identify and analyze the sources of incoming gravitational waves. The first detection and observation of these ripples in the fabric of space-time were made by LIGO on September 14, 2015, some 100 years after Albert Einstein predicted their existence in his general theory of relativity. The gravitational waves that were detected were produced 1.3 billion years ago in a cataclysmic explosion. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, who will win Oscars for Best Song? We'll preview Sunday's Academy Awards. As a long mining boom comes to an end, Australia is pinning its economic hopes on a free trade agreement with China that came into force in December 2015. While tariffs have been cut, opportunities have soared. But there's still a beguiling maze of cultural differences that remains to be negotiated between the two trading partners. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is a great day for Australia. This is a great day for Australian jobs.
There was triumph in the air when Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull announced the signing of a historic free trade agreement with China. One of the deal's main architects is the former Trade Minister Andrew Robb. He admits that cracking the Chinese Code of Guangxi, or the nurturing of long-term business relationships, is a critical challenge.
The other constraint is, you know, not understanding the culture, not having an awareness of how business is done, the cultural norms. We need to have that mutual understanding for the differences. And then once you do that, then you've got an opportunity to really maximise the relationship.
Chinese New Year is a glittering spectacle in Sydney. The cultural, social and commercial ties between Australia and its biggest trading partner have never been stronger. But it can be tough for foreigners to unlock the secrets of doing business in China. Do you shake hands before a meeting? Will pointing a finger during a conversation cause offence? And should you bring a gift? And if so, what kind? Several companies now offer tailored cultural training for executives. Della Dang is a marketing specialist at the Australia Asia Executive Centre.
If a Chinese business person gives their business card to me, I have to receive it with both hands, and I need to make sure that I'm not putting it in any kind of indecent place. And by indecent, I mean even if I put it in my back pocket, that's not okay, because then when you sit down, you're sitting on their name, which is disrespectful.
Monica Tu sells multi-million dollar real estate in Sydney to Chinese buyers. She moved to Australia from southern China in the late 1980s and says bridging the cultural gap hasn't been easy.
You know, I've been here for 27 years. It took me a lot of time to really get essence what Australian or Western people have, has to offer as well. It's just so different. But I think if you learn the both culture, take the initiative, you'll really enjoy it. That will benefit your social life and your lifestyle. And also importantly, it will help your business. It's a long way for us to go. So everybody will have opportunity to work together and to make a beautiful world.
Australian companies looking to expand into China are hoping this first year of the new free trade agreements will be fortune-changing. But academics warn there are pitfalls ahead. Sally Ann Gaunt is the senior lecturer for cross-cultural management at the University of New South Wales. She says that in parts of Asia, Australians aren't seen as hard-working, and she recalls giving advice to an executive in Singapore.
This young lady was very critical of her client, saying they're lazy, they all go home at 5 o'clock, they all go to the beach, and we're here working very, very hard. Of course, what she failed to realise is that when you're working somewhere like Australia, you don't have an extended family, you don't have home help. You really have to do everything yourself. When I actually started to point these factors out, she was absolutely shocked. She went, oh, what do you mean you don't have maids in Australia? I said, well, no, many people don't.
Australia is party to 10 free trade agreements. Most are in its backyard in Asia, including Japan, South Korea and China. Taking advantage of the opportunities they offer is not just about products, prices and performance, but understanding the complex cultures that make businesses tick. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. This weekend, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences awards its Oscars in Hollywood. The Best Song and Best Original Score Oscars are among those being handed out on Sunday. International Edition's David Byrd has this look at the nominees.
The song that plays in Michael Caine's head as he portrays an aging orchestra conductor in Youth is up for the Academy Award for Best Song. Composer David Lang has never written for film before, but says his experience has taught him the vital role that music plays in movies.
Most of all, the thing that I'm excited about, which I guess I sort of knew but I didn't really know, now I sort of feel, is that music in movies is really important and people really care about it. And so that's a really kind of beautiful and exciting thing to know.
Eight-time Oscar nominee Diane Warren is up for her song with co-writer Lady Gaga, Till It Happens to You from The Hunting Ground, an expose of rape crimes on U.S. college campuses, their institutional cover-ups, and the devastating toll that they take on students and their families. Warren says she was more excited about this nomination than her others because of the subject matter.
Look, it's always great to be nominated. It really is. I mean, think of how many songs are out a year. You know, hundreds, thousands in movies. And the fact that someone picked this song, it's amazing.
Multiple Grammy winner Sam Smith and Jimmy Napes teamed up for Writings on the Wall from the James Bond film Spectre. Smith says that he wanted to do something different from the previous Bond themes.
That's what I felt made it different to the other Bond songs that feel classic in that way. I wanted to inject a bit of our lyric and the way that we write songs, which is so vulnerable. And I think for Bond, that's very strange to do that. So that's what I wanted to do. All the loving and
separating. Also up for Best Song is Manta Ray from the documentary Racing Extinction. Composer Jay Ralph says he had a very special reason for writing the song the way he did.
During the making of the documentary, the filmmakers invited me up to the Cornell Bioacoustic Laboratory, and they played me a recording of a male OO bird singing his mating call. Unbeknownst to him, he was the last of his species, so the mating call would never be answered. So I wanted the score to be a melody response to his little song.
Carter Burwell is up for Best Original Score for Carol, in which Rooney Mara portrays an aspiring photographer who develops a romantic relationship with an older woman, played by Oscar winner Cate Blanchett. Burwell says because the film has sparse dialogue, the music plays a huge role.
But in a lot of other areas, it was about, let's not say this yet, let's hold back a little bit of melody, let's make it a suspense film.
The 88th Annual Academy Awards ceremony is Sunday at the Dolby Theater in Los Angeles. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
That's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Armenia's capital, Yerevan, USAID recently announced the launch of the Advanced Science and Partnerships for Integrated Resource Development Project, or ASPIRED, a three-year initiative designed to curb the rate of groundwater abstraction in the Ararat Valley to sustainable levels. USAID's recent assessment of the status of groundwater resources in the Ararat Valley, the country's key agricultural hub, has indicated an alarming situation. The decreasing level of groundwater supply and the uncontrolled use of artesian water by fish farms has left some 30 communities in the Ararat and Armavir region without reliable access to drinking or irrigation water. In addition, these water shortages pose a real threat to the country's agricultural sector, the socioeconomic and environmental well-being of these regions, as well as the safety and security of Armenia's sole nuclear power plant, Metsamor, which relies on these water resources for its cooling system. Despite recent measures by the Armenian government to regulate the use of artesian water in the valley, the situation remains serious and is among the Armenian government's top priorities. USAID's new ASPIRED project will assist the government of Armenia in developing consistent policy and technical solutions for a more regulated use of these vital groundwater resources. The project will focus on closing data gaps, improving technical capacities, and tools for informed decision-making, increasing access to innovative water conservation and energy efficiency technologies, and promoting regulatory and enforcement mechanisms. ASPIRED will also conduct an inventory of the wells and springs in the Ararat Artesian Basin, create a publicly accessible integrated data system for the valley, install an automated control system for monitoring groundwater abstraction in 10 selected fisheries, and pilot innovative technologies for efficient groundwater and energy use. Policy recommendations will be provided to the Armenian government to optimize fees for underground water use by fisheries and introduce stricter water permit practices and oversight. The United States is proud to work with Armenia in meeting the needs of the Armenian people for sustainable water resources.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.